Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, and I wanted to thank you for tuning in, spending a little bit of time with me. Today, we're going to be talking about, well, we're partly talking about dating. We're talking about going from early, just meeting somebody and progressing a relationship to where you might choose it to be your primary relationship for maybe even the rest of your life. And what are some of the challenges with that? Where do people go wrong? And we then dive into how to have some of the hard conversations about sex, about politics, about race. And it applies, you know, whether you're brand new dating or whether you've been together a very long time. Damona Hoffman is my guest. She is a dating coach, and she's here to share a bunch of really insightful tips about how to make this progression, continue to deepen your relationship and learn about each other, cultivate curiosity. Hope you enjoy it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So, Damona, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This will be interesting because a lot of the content on the podcast is geared to people, you know, in relationships already, maybe in relationship for a very long time, thinking about their sex life. But plenty of people, you know, are dating or splitting up and going to need to date or, you know.
Or in relationships and dating.
Yes, know? Right. Maybe dating many people. And they're still, of course, they're still interested in a good sex life. So I wanted to pick your brain about dating in general and see how you work with people with that and what your insights are to share. So would you just say a little bit about the nature of your work in this and how long you've been doing it and why?
I'll start with the why. Okay. Always start with why. I don't know why, but I do know that I figured this all out about 15 years ago. I met my husband online way before it was cool. And I found that I really had a knack because of my prior experience in casting. I was a casting director in television. I worked for CBS and Paramount, and I used to teach classes for actors and how to market themselves and have headshots that would really stand out to someone me.
Does that translates totally?
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. So even at the early, at the onset of online dating, I saw the parallels there between telling your story visually through photos and the first date and the audition basically being the same thing. So after I met my husband, people started coming to me for help with their dating profiles. And inevitably, I'd find a mismatch between what they thought they were putting out there in the world and what they were really saying. And once that clicked, I started just writing profiles on the side for fun initially, just for friends and family. And then I got so many calls. I met someone, I'm getting married, I'm having a baby. I thought, wait a minute, maybe people really need help with this. So I was doing the profile writing probably for 6 or 7 years. And then I found that I really needed to expand my skill set so that I could support people through the entire process of pre-date to really pre-marriage is what I specialize in. And I became certified as a life coach and then ultimately specifically as a dating coach to expand my work in this field.
Okay. So sorry, I got so many questions in my head all at the same time.
Girl, me too.
How much of dating these days is app-based, you know, and is that the best way or what are the other ways? Like, what do you
what day is it? Yeah. Like, you mean You mean these days, like the new normal days? Almost
well, that's
all.
True. In the middle of quarantine, right? That's probably true.
But I will say that has been the norm for the majority of my clients over the last 15 years. Most of my success stories, and prior to the pandemic, 90% of the clients that were in my one-on-one program were in an exclusive relationship within 3 months. And most of them met somebody on a dating app.
Okay.
I still have good results, but you know, I say now in the midst of the pandemic, results may vary. Timelines may vary because there's just so much pressure for each decision that we make, whether you're deciding to meet offline for the first time or invite someone into your home or even just meet outdoors masked. There's a level of risk with each decision along that dating process. And I find that sometimes people are dealing with things you don't even know. They may have lost someone to COVID. They may have lost their job due to COVID. And so the system that I used to be able to predictably say would be X, Y, and Z, and you get this result. Now it's kind of like X, Y, sometimes plus C, sometimes minus C, but it's really keeping me on my toes, certainly, to navigate the new situation.
Right? Yeah, I bet. But well, let's put COVID aside for a second. I wish we could put COVID aside for a second, really. But In general, where do people go wrong or what do they need to know if they want to go from pre-date to pre-marriage, like you said, like they're really looking for a relationship? Mm-hmm. What are the key mistakes they're making or the key things you'd want people to know in terms of really getting that relationship?
Well, I've boiled it down to a pretty simple and repeatable process. I found that if someone is frustrated with dating and not getting the result they want, ultimately moving into a relationship, it's one of five areas.
Okay.
It's either mindset, which can be either the thoughts, the predominant thoughts that are running through their mind about there are no good men in Seattle or Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago. I've literally heard it all over the world.
There's not a good man in the entire world.
There must not be any left. The way that I hear some of my clients talk, I'm like, I don't know how people are finding love still because there aren't any left, clearly. Yeah. But, you know, it's not really our fault that we develop these thought processes. They come from our experiences, right? And so we think, it must not be me. It must be the situation that I'm in. It must be the options that I have available. And there are certain very real drop-offs, especially on dating apps around age. Mm-hmm. Like I'll hear from a lot of women, oh, if they're in their 40s, 50s, 60s, men my age only want to date someone younger. No, actually not true at all. Mm. But it is true that they might search only at certain, there's usually age drop-offs every 5 years.
Okay.
Tend to think in 5-year blocks.
Right.
Or they'll think in terms of their age, like 5 years up, 5 years down. I hear that a lot. And it's incumbent upon you to do something about the way that you're showing up to them. And I'll get into that in some of the other places. So mindset could be what you're bringing in, or it could be just not having any clarity around who that person is that you ideally would want to meet. Mm. Then there's sourcing. Where are you finding the dates? So we started out talking about, is online dating the main thing? Yes, but that doesn't mean that's the only thing you should be doing. And then I help people identify the other areas in their life where they might be able to meet somebody and may have overlooked that as an avenue. And then there's screening. How do you determine if someone is the right match for you? All the time people would come to me with burnout, like especially pre-pandemic, but even now too. They'd say like, oh, I've been doing this dating app thing for years and I haven't met anyone. And I'm so frustrated. And then when I get into their process, I find that they're not really filtering effectively. And then yes, it is taking a lot of time and effort and energy. You're getting a lot of disappointment because people have different reasons for being on the app and mm-hmm. they're not in alignment with you. And yeah, that's exhausting if you don't have clarity in the way that you're screening before you even get to that point. And then there's presentation, how you're showing up for the date. And then there's follow through. How you are ending things, and then how are you following up after the date? And honestly, it is that simple. If I go through that system with clients, I always find that somewhere in that there's I call it a loop, a dating loop, where they keep repeating that step, and they just need the information to move past that.
Huh. Is there a difference? I mean, I don't know what age people you generally work with, but I'm thinking about, you know, my children who are adult, but young adult, all they know are these apps. In fact, so much of their social life has been, you know, remote, online, technology based. Do they have an advantage or a disadvantage? Do you work with young people? Like maybe they got this whole online connection thing down, whereas older people have to work harder at it.
You're right that the attitude has changed. They've grown up online, so it's not so weird. Like for my clients that are older, there's this whole onboarding of just getting them to accept that an app might be an okay story for them to tell. Like people get really caught up in the story. Like, I don't want that to be where I meet my match. Why? Why? Like, why does the story matter? We're not telling fairy tales. I mean, then look at Meghan and Harry's fairy tale and how that turned out, right? Yeah, right, like, right. We're not telling fairy tales. The goal is to find a true connection and someone who sees you and appreciates you. So what does it matter? It's just the tool that brings you two together. I will say most of the people who are clients in my programs tend to be between 30 and 50, because that tends to be the age where you get frustrated enough where you're like, I got to do something about this. But I do find for my Dates and Mates podcast, my listeners have gotten a lot younger and I get a lot of questions. They haven't figured it out yet. I get a lot of questions from people in their early 20s, but they're different kind of questions. It's questions around communication, because I talk a lot about also texting and how to build the relationship and build the connection, even virtually. I get questions about social media and that effect on the relationship. And I get more of just, I can't tell what his intentions are, what her intentions are, their intentions are. And so there's still confusion, but it's on different parts of the dating process.
Yeah. Leading into this, before we turned on the record, you said, I leave the sex issues to the sex professionals, but it must come up. Like when do you bring up STI testing? When do you bring up sexual concerns, or how do you deal with, you know, sex starting to show up in a relationship?
Yeah. And just to clarify, like I will talk about, obviously sex is a part of any relationship, because most of the people that I'm working with are early phase daters. They have different questions. Like they're not asking me like how to spice up their sex life when it's gotten stale. So I leave all of the technical details to the experts. But as far as when to talk about STI testing. It's funny because now I know we wanted to put COVID aside so badly, but we really can't, because everything is topsy-turvy. Because before, that was the deciding factor, like when you were going to sleep with someone and having the sexual health and wellness conversation. Now, you have to have a whole other conversation of exclusivity, a bubble exclusivity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like I did an episode of Dates and Mates where I had a healthcare professional that was like, here's what I would recommend. You should quarantine for 10 days and then take a COVID PCR test and then wait 5 days and then take a COVID PCR test and then maybe you can kiss one another. Oh, and it's man. Like, I know that's not what people are doing.
Right.
From the people that write into my show. I know that's not what they're doing. But it's an interesting question. And whenever my clients come up against a difficult conversation that they are hesitating to discuss, I recommend they start with a personal share. It's all about connection, right? So it's a personal share without expectation. Like, I decided I'm going to get tested. What do you think about that? Not like, will you do it? Well, why not?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just, what do you think about that? If that person is on the same page as you, then any reasonable person would say, you know what, that's a great idea. I think I should get tested too. Or they would say, oh, well, you know, that doesn't really matter to me. I mean, I don't really.
Tested for what?
And then you have information too. But I look at it all as like a puzzle. To me, the dating process is a puzzle. And you're not looking for perfection. You're just looking for the right fit. So every piece of information either tells you that that person is a better fit for you or that they're not.
Yeah.
It's not good or bad one way or the other.
Yeah. It's Jessa here, just taking a quick break. Thanks for listening. Are you interested in being a guest on the show? I'm always looking for people with expertise to share that could enrich other people's sex lives. And I'm also interested in hearing from people who have transformed their own intimate relationship and would want to share their story with my listeners. So if you've got something to contribute to the discussion and want to see about being featured on an upcoming episode, please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, and check out the Be a Guest details. You'll find everything you need there. So speaking of other potentially difficult or loaded conversations to have, interracial dating, the racial tension and slash awareness that exists in the culture today, how do you recommend people have those conversations?
Very slowly.
Or maybe we should even start with, you know, as people are evaluating their dating choices, swipe right and swipe left? You can tell I've never been on Tinder.
You got it right. You
know, where might race even be playing a role before people are aware of it? And then if you're in an interracial relationship, what are those conversations? How should those go? What comes up?
Okay. Those are two different questions. So let me actually even break it down further. And I will talk you through a realization that I had. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I've been doing this for 15 years. And I'm a person of color, for those who are listening and can't see me.
Well, yes, because it is audio only. So and I am not. So
for those who are listening, I'll tell you, my background has always been multicultural. So I come from not just a person of color. My mom is Black. She's from the projects in Detroit off of 8 Mile Road. And my dad is a Jewish man from the suburbs of Chicago, the son of immigrants. They are no longer together. Now, my stepmother is Mexican-American. My sister-in-law is Indian-American. Her parents had an arranged marriage in India. So basically, like, layers upon layers upon layers of my cultural awareness has always been about inclusivity. I also, when I was a television executive, was also running the diversity program at a couple of different TV networks. So that is the lens through which I have always seen the world. And I actually, in the last year, had a big realization around the time that George Floyd was murdered and the conversations around race became bubbled up to the surface again. I saw in a group of love coaches that I consider friends and colleagues, somebody asked if excluding a particular race from your dating preferences was a dating preference or a racial bias. And I was like, well, that's racial bias. Isn't that the definition of racial bias? Like, you're excluding someone based on race. And it was so shocking to me that there were a lot of people who I'm very close with who had a completely different perspective on that. And while I'm a reasonable person and I'm open to discourse, so I engaged in the conversation, but I said, I think for too long, we've hidden behind all of these little microaggressions or these little decisions, you know, these micro decisions that we make throughout our lives and throughout our day where we think, well, that's not me. Like, I'm not harboring any racial bias, but yet we allow it to be okay if it's couched under dating preference. Well, so what I've always done, actually, when my clients say to me that they won't date someone of a particular race or they will only date someone of a particular race, I do this business technique called the 5 whys. So I'll say, well, why? And usually as we start to unpack those layers, we find it's because, well, I've never dated anyone of that race, or I had one bad experience with someone of that race and then I excluded everyone else, or because my parents wouldn't accept it, or because my community wouldn't accept it. And I just think, look, we are at a time where these conversations have to be brought to the surface, and we can close our eyes and go back to sleep if we want to, but that's not getting us any further into the conversation. And I think the more courageous thing to do, and ultimately, the more satisfying thing for your love life to do, is to say, what would happen if I accept that that belief system is based upon a series of choices, which may not even be mine, but they are based on who I have been exposed to, who I've had experiences with. And what if everything I thought I knew about that person just based on the color of their skin is not true? What if that's just patently false? And what would happen if I took that belief and set it aside and focused on the stuff that really does matter, like communication and conflict resolution, like common goals for the future, like values? And that's where, like, even where my parents seem to be from two very different worlds, like, their cultural values are very similar. Even though they were of two different religions, the core beliefs were very similar. And I just ultimately have to believe that we have more in common than we are different. And I don't mean to sound Pollyanna-ish, but I really have seen that and I believe that. So I feel like I've been really charged in the last year with getting people to just expand their parameters and ask themselves why they hold the beliefs that they do.
Yeah. But when it comes to some of the conversations, if you're in an interracial relationship, I mean, I guess a new one or a long-term, maybe long-term, you've figured these things out, but some of these differences matter. We don't want to just pretend, you know, we're not colorblind, right? Like that's not helpful. So what kind of conversations do you think people need to have? Let's say if they're relatively new dating.
Yeah, they absolutely do matter. And that's when I recommend we go into a place of listening and understanding, not trying to be understood, but trying to understand the other person. And I think for too long, we've been conditioned to, when we get into these arguments, even like if we're not talking about race, we're talking about politics. That has been the biggest, the yeah. most divisive thing. That's been more divisive than race, actually, even in the last year.
Yeah.
And I also work with OkCupid, and I see it in their data of 70% of people said that they could not date someone with opposing views. That's up from just 2 years ago. It was 50%.
Wow.
So whatever difference it is, we can't ever approach it from the perspective of like, I'm just trying to get you to hear my side of things. It's like, how can I learn and how can I listen? And I also say this like on all sides of the conversation, because a lot of times, like I hosted a show called Hashtag Black Love, and some of the women on that show were open to dating people of other races and some were not. And what I would hear most commonly from that and from Black listeners on my show is like, oh, I don't want to have to like explain my culture to people, or, you know, also people are very afraid of being fetishized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it comes down to our lenses again. If you have the fear of that happening and you are approaching everything through that lens, then you are going to see that happen more often. If you are approaching it from a goal of understanding and knowing that we're all going to mess this up, like you're going to say the wrong thing. You probably already have. You're going right. to say the wrong thing at some point. But we have to, if you're in a partnership, you have to be willing to have these conversations. Like even just going back to the Meghan and Harry interview, like the fact that Prince Harry said he just really didn't even think about race before he was with Meghan, because that was just not, it was just not a part of his world. It was not yeah. something he had to look at. But so much of the way that she's been portrayed in the media and the way that just the conversations that have happened around their relationship really boil down to race. And so you're right. Like we can't sweep it under the rug. We mm-hmm. have to talk about it, but we also have to be willing to look at our stuff. And I'm not going to say like the royal family needs to look at their stuff because they're going to do what they're going to do. But if you ain't in the royal family, go ahead and let's unpack some stuff together. And I do this even in my own relationship. Like there was a moment with my husband when we were filling out paperwork for our kids. So I'm half white, half Black. My husband is white and he checks white on the race box. And I was like, wait, I'm sorry. Did you just check that our kids were white? And he was like, they're 3/4 white. And I said, yeah, but they're 1/4 Black. What do you mean? And what could have been a really contentious conversation actually blossomed into more understanding. And
yeah.
I can't believe that we hadn't had that conversation in 17 years we've been together. But it helped illuminate the gap between us that we continue to close through more conversation.
Yeah. So I'm getting, even 17 years later, this goal of openness, curiosity, seeking to understand each other, whether it's a new, brand new first date or you've been married, you know, together 17 years.
It's the same.
These differences the same. You can learn about each other with this. It can be a rich thing in a relationship.
It can be. And I think just overall, people are in a really big rush to get to the finish line in early relationships. Like, people will always ask me, well, I met this person, I don't know where it's going. And like, what are the signs? Like they want me to give the red flags or the green flags.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, just tell me, is this the person or not? And I'm like, I can't tell you that. Unfortunately, only time can tell you that. But the more that you have these deeper conversations about values and goals. Like, we knew we were aligned on values. We didn't know we weren't aligned on identity. And we'd had conversations around religion because that was an active decision, an active choice that we had to make.
Right, right.
But we didn't know that choosing our children's race was an active choice that we had to make until the moment was upon us.
Yeah, yeah. So how do some of these conversations show up? What do you hear from clients, conversations around sex that come up, either about having sex or not having sex, or what kind of sex, or how to advocate for, you know, their sexual preferences or desires versus establishing boundaries? Like, these got to be some of the conversations, you know, that also require a goal of understanding, right?
Yeah, I would say obviously the sexual health question is the first thing to come up. I'll say then the next thing that a lot of people will say is, do you think that someone's sexual compatibility can change? Like, do you think if the sex is not good, that's how it is forever? And I've seen a lot of people, I'll just say it in my perspective, and then I'd love to hear yours. But I would say people toss away a perfectly good relationship because in the early phase, the sex isn't as fulfilling as maybe I think prior relationships that they compare it to. And I look at every connection is different. And I do believe that if you have good communication and, you know, just like I advocate for my clients also being in therapy and having mental health support, I think it's also good to have sexual health support. And you might not be able to fix some of those problems on your own, but I don't think if you really feel seen and heard and appreciated and loved and you are attracted to the other person, I don't think sex is a reason to walk away from something in the early phase. But I'd love to know what you think.
Yeah, there's different aspects to it because I think, first of all, new in a relationship, that great sex often mellows out anyway, like the brain chemistry changes. And, you know, so all hot and heavy in the beginning doesn't necessarily last anyway. I do think that with communication and care and consideration and practice and everything else, technique and compatibility can be worked on. May not feel like fire, but I think it could be fulfilling. And I think it's possible for two people to be so different in their erotic template that that may not be a good match. You know, if what turns you on turns me off and we really don't have common ground here, somebody's kinky, somebody isn't, like just kinky, you know, like occasionally it seems like it's mutually exclusive. But I tend to think that those people probably don't end up together anyway. I think there's some way we have a subconscious radar or something, you know, but occasionally what people want to be doing sexually is so different that that's not going to work, at least to be monogamous.
True. Yeah. And I do hear from people that are finding they're sexually compatible with somebody, you know, especially like if they are into the same kinds of kink, but then they're not treated well or they don't have any of the other elements.
Right.
And I don't know what you do in that situation where it's like, well, what's the most important thing that you're seeking? And this is why I feel like also I've seen a huge rise. Like, I don't have any data. I don't have OkCupid data on this, although they do allow for non-monogamy as an option in their search. And they've always been very inclusive and open, right?
Yeah.
But I see a lot of people also that are becoming more open to non-monogamous relationships. So
right.
Your life partner is your life partner for certain things. And then you have, you know, your sexual partners for that fulfill the other needs.
Right, right. And for some people that works fine. I certainly think if people are together, they've got great sex, but they're not being treated well, like the rest of the stuff isn't good. I would veer the other direction. But yeah, it is a matter of what do you value and what's important and what's the balance of these things we're looking for in a partner. So
right. And this is why in the beginning phase of dating, I throw away the checklist. Like whatever my clients are thinking, like must make this much money, must be this tall, must be, you know, I'm just like that. None of that matters. Meet them, whether virtually or in person, eventually has to be in person.
Right.
I like to say within the first 6 weeks, everything's topsy-turvy in COVID, but for long distance relationships, 6 to 8 weeks, like even in the midst of COVID, if you're going to keep it going. But even in spite of that, if you are led by curiosity rather than chemistry or physical attraction or whatever is on your list, I say, really ask yourself, am I curious about this person? What do I still want to know after the end of the first date and the second date and beyond? And if you get to the third date and you're not feeling some sort of chemistry, you're not feeling some sort of sexual pull to them, then I say it's okay to walk away. But really, I see a lot of people walking away in those first two or three dates because they'll be like, I don't know, we didn't have any chemistry, or, you know, for whatever arbitrary reason. And I find that the curiosity is really what fuels my relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm even more curious about my husband now after 17 years than I was back then. And what has really worked for a lot of my clients who've been able to find lasting love.
I love that. I talk about curiosity in a lot of different contexts in my work, but I love that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It applies across the board.
Yeah. And so anything I didn't ask that you want to cover before, you know, I do want you to share where people find you and what kind of programs you've got that they might be interested in.
Yeah. No, I feel like we've talked about so much. We've talked about the elements of attraction and the foundations of a successful relationship. And I just, you know, I said earlier, I think finding love is a puzzle.
Yeah.
And I just love figuring out this puzzle with people and hearing people's stories. So I do the Dates and Mates podcast every week. And you can also listen at datesandmates.com. And then I also do have various online programs that are available there that either can jumpstart you into a relationship or get you deeper into the relationship that you're already in. So
great.
That's the place to start.
All right. Well, I'll put the links in the show notes too, so it's easy for people.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.